Welcome film industry professionals, film buffs, and aspiring filmmakers. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast presented by Paradoxical Films. And I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi, and co-host, Ms. Dana De La Camera. Join us on a journey behind the camera and, most importantly, beyond what we know about cinema and the craft of filmmaking. So please sit down, grab some popcorn and soda, and let's ride this cinema road together, because we are on the Cinema Pathway.
Welcome, film family across the world. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast with Dana De La Camera. This podcast is for people who make films and those who want to connect with the creative community. Discover up-and-coming talent or learn tips from pros. Every week, Cinema Pathway spotlights new and experienced creative talent doing exciting things you don't want to miss. Today, we are honored to have Cuban-American actress, stuntwoman, and general badass, Yesenia Cosio. Yesenia was born and raised in Miami, Florida. At the age of 5, she found her way into the arts by the way of dance, music, and then theater. In January 2014, after her risky but determined decision to quit the corporate world, her acting career started to skyrocket, making her one of the most sought-after actresses in the independent film industry, Florida, completing appearances in several music videos, short films, feature films with 5 principal roles. As a recognized hard worker and businesswoman, Cosio also produced 2 independent films, Betrayal, directed by George Samo, and Haunted, directed by Antonio Oliva. She most recently worked on Black Panther and other Marvel movies, and she has also made a name for herself in the modeling, fitness, and pageant industry, shooting for magazines and calendars with well-known photographers such as Alex G and Carolina Gonzalez. She's also walked the runway for designer Nora Marvilli, held by Bella Fashions, and her first pageant title was Miss Florida U.S. Nation Ambassador. With a portfolio like that, it is a privilege to have Yesenia on the show. Welcome to the podcast, Yesenia. Thank you for being here with us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's dive in. So tell us about, you know, the early years. You know, how did you get into acting? Tell us a little bit about your path.
Well, I started at an early age, around like 9 years old. I started as a singer, and that's what I wanted to do, and singing in local churches and stuff like that. And then during that time, I went through something very difficult in my life where, you know, my dad, he went to jail. I went through a really tough time mentally. I just completely just took everything out of my life. I didn't want to do anything creative, arts, like I just didn't care anymore about, you know, my future. And I mean, although I was so young, you know, I just, I didn't have motivation. So I just stuck to school and working and, you know, got caught up in that hamster wheel that I feel like we all do at some point. And started working for the corporate world. I became one of the most sought out in corporate America. I did really good. I worked human resource. I worked in Geek Squad. I did really well in that world, but I wasn't happy. I was living that world that we all get stuck into because we have to pay our bills and we have responsibilities. Eventually, I started taking acting classes again, and I said, I have to cut back. You know, I have to just let go of everything else that I was doing because I felt like I was going through some spiritual suicide, just being stuck in that world that we all get sucked into, you know?
First of all, thank you for sharing that.
Of course, definitely, yeah.
When do you kind of determine, like, something has to change? Because this happens when you're young and then you got lost, right, with the experience. And how did you, like, really find your way back to that creative, you know, giving yourself that space to kind of
get back into
creating? Because it's shocking, right? It's trauma. It's like traumatizing because you're like a kid and you're like, oh, and you're having fun, you're performing, and then something happens and you're like, your whole world changes. Yeah. And it's like a journey to find your way back to.
Exactly.
So was there a turning point that got you back on track?
Definitely. Looking back at my life now, right? Because a lot of things, when they happen to us, we're like, what is the point of that? And it usually, that question comes to you when things are happening at the moment, right? Because we never know the answer. And most of the time we'll find out maybe a few months later or years down the line. And now looking back at my life, I understand why the things that happened did. And they were necessary, because if not, I wouldn't be here, right? Because I am the person I am today because I'm a sum of everything that happened in my life, and that was necessary. Looking back at my life, I think if I didn't go through the mental health issues that I went through and all that, I wouldn't have hit rock bottom. And I feel that everyone needs to hit rock bottom at some point, whatever that means, mm-hmm. whether it's mentally, physically, whatever it is, in order for you to find that resiliency to come back and become the person you want to be.
So how did you know you hit rock bottom?
Mentally, and actually my husband was a part of that journey where I lost myself. I just didn't know who I was anymore. It started happening a lot when I started getting involved a lot with children with cancer. I actually dress up like superheroes excuse to go to the children's hospitals, because that's the only way they let you in, is if you're coming as a visitor, you know, and we'll dress up. I would as Wonder Woman and he would as Spider-Man. We would come and spend time with them because a lot of them were actually being abandoned by their own family because they had to go to work, but it wasn't a regular abandonment. It was more like, okay, this is just too much for me. And they would just leave their kids in the hospital and they wouldn't even visit them. And we met this little girl called Zoe Pavon, and I became so attached to her and her world that I think it started affecting me mentally. And I started hitting rock bottom, I think, after I met her, because I wanted so bad to just take everything that she had and just, I'm like, God, why don't you just give it to me? Like, let her live. This is like a 6-year-old little girl, and just living in her footsteps and being called by her mom at 3 a.m. to come and try to help her because she's having an anxiety attack at 6 years old. And I was thankful at that point that I went through what I did, because I would always ask myself, like, God, why am I going through these mental health challenges? If it wasn't for what I went through, I wouldn't be able to go at 3 a.m. help that little girl out, because no medication was able to tame her or help her out. And I was able to just show up, and her mother would just look at me with tears in her eyes and be like, I don't know what you did, but you're a blessing. And I'm just like, this is why I went through what I went through. That's when I hit rock bottom, because I gave so much of me psychologically and mentally to her. I feel like I give my soul. I remember, like, out of nowhere, I started to feel like a little confused. It just kind of hit one day to the next. I started feeling confused and a little out of touch of reality. And I'm like, okay, I've felt this before, because I grew up with anxiety disorder since I was a little girl, but it was hitting me really hard, where I lost feeling. Nothing made me happy. It's almost like serotonin did not exist in my brain. Nothing I ate, nothing my parents would be like, they'll be like, we're gonna go to Disney, we're gonna, and you know, my parents will always talk me up about something that normally would be fun for me, and nothing. I was just a walking body in this earth, and I had no feeling, no willingness to live, no nothing. And I'm like, what is the point of me? Why? And emotionally, I just hit rock bottom. And in no way am I blaming this on her, but I feel that as a human being, that was probably the turning point in my life, where you're going to hit rock bottom mentally so that we could rebuild you and fix you. Mm-hmm. You know, because we got to break you to build you. And a lot of people don't understand that. And a lot of people are always so against, why is this happening to me in my life? You know, like, why do I have to go through this? Why me? We don't understand is that if life does not break us, we can rebuild ourselves into better humans. The problem with that is some of us are resilient about that and others don't make it. So, you know, that was my turning point.
So you got to reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
So I like to say, like, a rebirth. That's
feel like I was born again.
That was like the boost, right? Like, that we're like, all right. This shall be. We're going in a new direction. Yeah. So what happened next?
As we know, when you hit rock bottom, you start to not care anymore about the consequences of things. You kind of care, but you don't, because since now you have references in your mind of what it feels like and what fear really feels like, there's really no obstacle that life could throw at you that you will be like, oh, I can't overcome that. There's absolutely nothing. This is for anyone that's listening that's been through some kind of mental health issue. But let me tell you, when you go through something like that, there's absolutely no challenge that life could throw at you that you're like, you know what? I'm scared of that. I'd face anything and I'd hope I'd die. That's how I felt back then. I'd be like, you know what? This is scary, but I want to face it and I hope something happened. I didn't care what happened to me. And then that's kind of what I think made me into a little daredevil. Like, a side of me cared, right? Because I love my family and I don't want to be selfish and be like, no, I don't care about my life. What kept me here was my family, not me. Because if it was for me, I would have been like long gone. It was just like, how selfish are you? Take your life or not be here when the people around you are going to be more affected than you. Because you're not going to be here anymore. It doesn't matter. But those people, your family that love you more than you love yourself, obviously, are going to suffer. And that's just selfish. So because I'm not a selfish person, I pushed through it and I said, I have to be here. Yeah.
So tell us about this Best Buy moment.
I know I was one of their best employees, and I don't say this in any cocky kind of way. I was their best employee because based on their numbers, they gave me a cell phone and iPods during that time. Everything, anything I wanted, because I worked for the business department of Best Buy and I was their highest, you know, sales rep and all that. Something happened along the way with another young lady from customer service that she was trying to be helpful with like an employee discount. And she did not notify me that she was giving me a bigger discount. I just asked her for an employee discount and she was trying to be nice. But that ended up getting us both fired because that red flagged the system. It just showed that, you know, you're not allowed to do more than what they're giving you. So since they didn't know whose fault it was because all they had was cameras and they can't hear a conversation, like most companies would do, they would just get rid of both employees to be fair, I guess. I remember I cried so much because I was like, you know what I felt like? I'm like, I'm there for 3 years. I give my all. I'm talking about everything that I have to raise this company. And just the next day, they just fire you like this with no consideration. You know, like, they just didn't give a shit. I was like, you really? I gave everything I had and you're just gonna fire me with your eyes closed like that and not even ask me what happened? That's, I think, what hurt me the most. That kind of, I felt like betrayal. And then I just learned, I'm like, this is corporate America. This is how it is. You're just replaceable. It doesn't matter how excellent of an employee you are, you know? So after that.
But you saw something on television.
I did. And thank you for reminding me of that. So let's back up a little bit, right? Sorry, I'm just so pissed at Best Buy. No, I'm it's over okay. it.
No, no, we love Best Buy.
Yeah. So I was in the home theater department working there. And I remember, you know, sometimes when we didn't have a lot of customers, I'll just stay looking at the loop of the TV and they'll replay the same movies over and over again. And they were playing the Avengers. And I remember seeing like a fight scene that they were doing. And I see Black Widow and all of them. And I'm like, oh my God. Like it just hit me. It hit me like a like lightning. And I'm like, I want to do that. I'm like, I want to, how do they do that? Like, do they have like a double? Like, are they the ones fighting? I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, I'm going to do that one day. And I remember I was on the mic because I had earlier told one of the guys, he asked me, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I'm going to be an actor. And he just starts laughing. And then he would just make fun of me. And like, I just responded to him over the mic because he's like, oh, what do you really want to do? And I responded, and I'm like, I want to be a stunt actor. And he's like, good luck. And I was like, all right, whatever. I honestly didn't know if this would happen. But I'm like, man, I've been through like tougher things in my life. All I could do is just go for it. And that makes me happy to just go for something even if I fail, but at least I'm gonna die trying. And I think that kind of mentality is what gets you to success. That was basically the starting point of my career. I started taking acting classes and I didn't have money. I was making only enough money to cover my acting classes, which were like $250 a month. And I was trying to cover my car. You know, we as a family and my grandparents, we're all trying to help, be supportive and help me. And I always had a very supportive family, thank God. But during that time, it was very difficult. You know, was dancing at this event company. I was just trying to make every, you know, penny I possibly could. And then from that point on, I met this coordinator in Florida that he does stunts. I was actually in Davie, Florida. They have this networking event that they did. And I remember I went one of the weekends and, you know, you present yourself and they're like, oh, so tell us what you want to do. What's the next step for you? And I'm like, well, I just did a bodybuilding competition. I really love fitness, but I love acting. So something that has both, that shares both worlds of fitness and acting. And then someone afterwards gave me a phone number for a stunt coordinator here in Florida and said, hey, this is a stunt coordinator. Maybe stunts might be your thing. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I reached out to him and his first question was, do you have a martial arts or gymnastics background? And I'm like, no, I did bodybuilding, happily. And he never responded. I'm like, shit. And I'm like, all right, maybe if I send them a photo of my latest, you know, like I was ripped. And I'm like, I'm going to send them a picture of what I look like. And immediately he responded. And he was just like, yeah, yeah, come to the studios and check it out and see if this is something that you're looking to get into. And the first stunt I ever see is a girl jump out of a window and her whole right of her side of the face was all blood. And I remember I was sitting in back of him. And he turns around, he looks at me, and then he was like, so, is this something you want to do? And the question was asked almost like saying, all right, girl, you're obviously not crazy enough, and you're going to say no, and you're going to get the hell out of here and leave me alone. And I was like, yes, this is exactly what I want to do. And he's like, okay, well, and he's like, well, she's not all there, so she might be a great candidate. That's one of the first requirements to be a stunt performer. You can't be all there, right? But we're not. None of us are. So we got into that world, and he helped me out. He started me off. His name is Juan Bofill. He started me off in Miami. Some of you might know who he is. Yeah. Great person. Great man. Very caring. And yeah, he just kind of gave me that push. And from there, I just kind of took off on my own and started realizing what I needed in order to really succeed in this world and become better. He started me off and gave me the first opportunities. And then I'm like, okay, now I got to get really good at gymnastics, martial arts, all that. And I started taking parkour classes and became pretty good at parkour. And then I started getting contacted by all these network televisions, that producers that they just found me online. And they're like, well, we don't know a lot of girls that do parkour. Mm. And we love that you're from Miami and you got that spice in you, and kept putting me into positions and opportunities that I never in my life would have thought.
So is he still doing that, Juan? Is he still here doing
that?
Yeah,
he is. Oh. I actually just worked with him yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have a very great friendship and connection. I've known him now for like 10 years. And, you know, he's definitely someone that has helped me a lot in my life and that I care a lot. And I went to L.A., and I landed this role on Ultimate Tag as Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And it's a Fox TV show. They found me online, one of the producers, and they interviewed me. 5 or 6 interviews later. I'm gonna backtrack a little bit before I get that, because that's a good story.
Hold that thought for one minute.
And we are gonna dive right into that when we return.
Yeah. We will continue to speak with Yesenia, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Coming this fall, crafting, cinematic vision, and lighting engineers with the instructor, Mr. Egon Stefan Jr. It is a masterclass hands-on workshop that is presented by Cine Video Tech and brought to you by Paradoxical Films. You will learn how to work with actual film, 16mm, Super 16mm, 35mm, and film cameras. In addition, how to load them and change magazines. The workshop will prepare you on how and what it takes to work on set as a first or second assistant camera, the fundamentals of lighting, and the pathway to becoming a director of photography. Furthermore, coming soon for the spring of 2025 is Unveiling the Artistry, a mastering of makeup techniques with the uber-talented special effects makeup artist, Miss Bianca Graciani. She will enrich your knowledge and techniques with professional tools that are implemented in the film industry, commercials, and much more. For information about the classes and updates, everything will be posted on our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/tell-your-story.
Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to the Cinema Pathway Podcast. I'm Dana Della Camera, here with actor and stuntwoman Yesenia Cosio. So let's get back into it. So Yesenia, before we stop for the break, you were talking us about your experience with Ultimate Tag. So tell us about that. How did that come about?
Well, I mean, Ultimate Tag was an amazing experience. Before I got into Ultimate Tag, 10 years before that, I visited Warner Brothers Studios and I was taking the tour. And I remember that the tour guy was telling us all, if you touch the gates and you make a wish, it will come true. I'm not superstitious. So I'm like, but you know what? I'll give it a shot. And I'm like, I touched the gate. And I'm like, when I come back to Warner Brothers Studios, it's going to be working. And I'm not coming back until then. And then 10 years fast forward, a producer reaches out to me. He found me somewhere in Google. I don't know. And he did have some recommendations from other athletes. And they're like, well, it's for this show. I can't tell you what it is. I can't even tell you the network or anything. But I just want you to know that it's going to be huge. And it's kind of like American Gladiators, but modern time. And it's like Chase Tag. But that's all I could say. And we're looking for athletes right now. And they kept interviewing me. And I was just like smashing all of them because I didn't know what it was for. I didn't know how big it was. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was something so casual, just like you and I right now having a normal conversation. I wasn't nervous about it or anything. And I was just doing so good in all my interviews. So on the 5th interview, I remember they text me again and they're like, hey, one more interview. And I'm here rolling my eyes like, oh my God. Like, okay. I'm like, I don't care, whatever, I'll do it. But I'm like, what am I interviewing for? Like, and, I remember this British lady with her accent. she's like, hey, can you FaceTime? And I'm like, sure. And I'm like, all right, so this interview is different. I guess now they want to see. I mean, I'm sure they know what I look like, but now in person. So this interview is going to be in person. Cool. So I FaceTime her and I see her and she's in the background with this other guy that was on headphones also. And then he turns around. He seemed like he was busy. And then he just turned around for that one moment to join her in saying, welcome to Warner Brothers. And I was just like, what? What are you welcoming to? Like, what do you mean Warner Brothers? And they're like, I'm like, okay. what is it? And they're like, it's Ultimate Tag. So it's a new TV show on Fox. And yeah, you're going to be one of the pro taggers. So one of the main people on it. Your personality, basically. I'm like, what? I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, this is insane. And I remember I was so excited. And I was just like, what is happening right now? I was like, it took a little bit to take life in at that moment, because I was like, everything just came full circle. Mm-hmm. I was like, I was just, you know, years ago wishing I would be anywhere near here. Now just life is just taking off for me. Mm-hmm. And I did the show and it was amazing. It gave me a lot of hype and I gained a lot of fans and stuff like that. An amazing experience. And that just kind of really put me on the map for other producers and, you know, networks and directors and stuff like that. And, you know, my life just kind of started taking off a lot from there, because then I was in LA for like 3 weeks and I fell in love with LA and I moved out there. And while I was in LA, that's how I landed. One of the biggest films I was in, which was Dune Part One, got hired on it alongside my husband as Fremens. They have Sadakar and the Fremens. When we got on it, we didn't know. We were like, what is Dune? I mean, it was, you know, like the first Dune ever. So we were a little bit still like not understanding what it was or how big the film was going to be. But when we started doing our research, we're like, you know, the coordinator told us, they're like, so Dune, if you guys have read the book or not, Star Wars was inspired by Dune. Dune came first and then Star Wars happened. So like, this is something really big that we're trying to bring to life and in a film. And there's going to be a lot of different, you know, like films of it. I was like, oh my God. So once we started diving into it and started training with one of the biggest stunt teams in LA, which is 8711. They're the ones that basically teach Keanu Reeves, and they did the movie Atomic Blonde and John Wick and all that. And we started training with the team, and it was one of the most difficult experiences, because we had to train 5 different martial arts. And we had to come up with like 120 choreographies a day. Oh, wow. So every 5 minute we were doing a different choreography we'd had to come up with to show the director and the stunt coordinator, because we were in the dream sequence a lot along the film. But in the dream sequence, Timothy Chalamet, which is the main actor, he has this dream sequence where there's like a big fight scene, and we were creating that fight scene in the background, but we had to come up with like 5 beats and put it in a loop, you know. Mm. So like, and we had to create a lot of different ones. So even though this is just the background, where you guys are probably maybe not even looking at it much or paying attention because there's so much going on, all these little pieces, that was like 2 weeks of just training. Wow. To make sure that even that little piece like that is perfection. The work and the time that goes into these high budget film is insane. And a lot of people don't know what happens behind the scenes, but yeah, we're part of it.
That is so exciting.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. It's definitely one of the highlights of my career.
So far.
Yeah, so far. That one, I mean, I've had a few other ones.
Yeah, you have had some other films. So we can go into that. You know, we can, I mean, you've been in other films like Black Panther and other Marvel films.
Yeah,
so.
Shazam, TV shows, Miss Marvel, Queen of the South. Like, I really can't even remember. Like, if I look at my resume, I'm like, I don't even remember. I remember, obviously, all the time, Black Panther and Duke, because it's like I was hammered a lot in them.
What do you mean?
Hammered meaning like we worked our butts off. It was very difficult, you know. And
in what way?
Physically difficult, and it was very demanding. Dune was very physically demanding because we had to learn 5 different martial arts. We have a parkour background. We were hired because they wanted, you know, our acrobatics in it and animal movement-like, but they had to teach us some martial arts that, you know, these people are part of the Jackie Chan team. They've been doing this for 25-plus years, and they're just throwing us in, and they're like, you got to learn this sword and Japanese sword and all this and sea lot in a matter of 2 weeks and make it look like you've been doing it for as long as we have. So it was very physically demanding. They were very, the pressure was on because they did not have a lot of room for mistakes. They'll teach you something once and they expect you to have it and be able to capture things just visually looking at it and then be able to pick up choreography like that. It was very difficult, but that I think really boosted me, and I needed that. You know, just like I said earlier, with every difficulty in life comes something grand and beautiful out of it. Because I'm like, man, this is really difficult, but it made me such a much better respected performer. Mm-hmm. That I'm like, after learning The hard work that is really put into this world, not just as a stunt performer, as an actor, and, you know, just the entertainment world. It's very difficult. And for those that take it very seriously and work really hard at it, you know, you will succeed and get there, but it's a lot of hard work. And Black Panther, same thing. Like, I joined first their water department, and we were just, you know, working on breath holds. And I did a lot of swimming during that time. On my own too, you know, because I had to make sure my breath holds were really good and, you know, that I was able to just keep up with everyone else. Basically, I had to get my scuba certification.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. We had to learn how to free dive a lot, and it was very difficult. And then afterwards, I joined the fight department, and we had to come up with a pre-visual fight concept for the director. And, you know, the director of Black Panther will be like, yes, I like that, or no, come up with something else. And, you know, we will be the teams that come up with the fight scenes from Black Panther. So those definitely were highlights. All the other films, there's definitely things that, you know, popped out. But I feel like those were meant a lot to me. And also being part of Black Panther, and one day just being another girl working in retail and going to, wow, I'm working for Marvel. And that was a dream of mine, too. Working for Marvel Studios, and then next thing you know, I'm a character in it, a telecon, that's what they call it, telecineal, and I'm just like, oh my God, like, this is such a dream come true, yeah.
So how do you, I guess being a female in the industry, I mean, I would imagine it's probably a male-dominated industry, but I'm not in it, so what's your experience, and have you had any challenges?
Yeah, definitely, there has been some challenges. Being in a male-dominated industry, it's never something easy, right, for us women. But, you know, it does teach us a lot. It toughens us up a lot. And I'm actually very grateful to always have been surrounded by men, as strong men, and powerful women, too. But there has been downsides to it, too, in the sense of coordinators, a lot of the times, would not take a trust on you as much as they would as on a male performer. And there has been moments in certain films where they're like, I know you could do that, but I'm going to give it to him. Or I don't know if you could do that, although I've heard you could, but I'd rather take a risk with a man than they would with a woman. Mm-hmm. So the risk is usually always taken with a man first than a woman. And I don't speak for everyone, because I've been part of films where it's been like, you guys are equal and I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. If he could eat shit, I expect you to do the same. And actually, Dune was one of them. Mm-hmm. The coordinator there, magnificent Roger Yuan, he didn't care. If he could do it, I expect you, and I don't expect anything less. He did not see gender. He did not see color. He's like, you are a human, and I want you to do this, if anything, better than them. So he really did push for that. But there has been some coordinators that, you know, they won't tell you, but you see it happen where it's kind of like, okay, for example, I would show them that I could do it, and they'll be like, who could do this? And then I'll kind of show them. They'll be like, you back there, which has never done that, does not have a parkour background or whatever it is. And they'll pick that person and now teach him the process instead of using someone that already knows just because of the gender. And, you know, you have to sit back and see a lot of that. And that has been one of the toughest things in the industry, where I've had to take a deep breath and keep on reminding myself why I'm doing this, because it is one of those things that starts to attack you. Like, why am I doing this? It becomes very difficult and challenging. Thankfully, I have never been disrespected. I think I come off a little strong to my male friends, where they kind of already see, okay. And I think as a woman, if you give yourself that respect immediately, people will follow through with it. I mean, there's always going to be the little sour apple here and there sometimes that might try to surpass that. But thankfully, that's never happened to me. And all my male friends have always been very respectful and, you know, and helpful and supportive.
Let's say there's somebody listening to this podcast, let's say in some small town in Iowa or something like that, and they have a dream to be, you know, a stunt woman. Like, what would you recommend that they do to help themselves, like where they're at, to get ready, you know, to train, yeah, and things like that?
I would definitely recommend to join some kind of martial arts gym. Because even if you're living in a, and actually I get those questions a lot from people that message me on social media. They're like, how can I start here? Like, there's no stunt gym here. Like, how? And I'm like, look, don't feel bad. When I started in Miami, mm-hmm, there was no stunt gym either. Yes, there was a stunt coordinator, which that helped me. And I'm sure, like, in a lot of states, there isn't a coordinator to guide, mm-hmm, you. But I would definitely recommend to start in martial arts, because I have met a lot of actors and stunt performers that have just started, you know, with their local acting academy or, you know, with a martial arts or gymnastics gym. You just need to have capabilities, you know, and abilities so that when you're put in that situation, you're ready and you don't have to wait to get ready.
Right.
You know, where we could kind of be like, okay, I could work with that. I could shape this person up instead of being like, oh, this person has nothing. Like, they have no knowledge of anything, or maybe even being someone difficult to work with. That's the worst.
So just train up on your skills and abilities in martial arts and maybe gymnastics or something like that.
Yeah.
And then let's say they're trained up, they're ready to go. Let's say, but you went to LA. So what would you recommend? Like, how could somebody get started in LA and as a stunt woman?
Definitely relocating is important after you've developed some skill sets. I don't know if LA is for everyone. I went to LA because after Ultimate Tag, I loved LA. And it's very like Miami because they have this, the ocean, and you have diversity, and I love that. But Georgia now also is a great state to go to. It's more affordable to live. There's a lot going on. A lot of the films are happening there now. Not so much in LA because LA is really expensive. But I would definitely recommend people to go to Georgia, if anything, which right now is overpopulated because of it. But yeah, that'd definitely be like my recommendation.
They should be taking acting classes and then, you know, martial arts and gymnastics and stuff like that. So then what would be next for them? How would you recommend they get, like, is there somebody to contact specifically for stunt work?
So I would recommend going to stunt gyms and becoming friends with people. Mm-hmm. Generally, you know, like, go to stunt gyms and not be scared to ask. If you see, you know, a skilled performer, you know, just working on its acrobatics or working like on falling, stuff like that, be like, be curious. Mm-hmm. Ask, hey, what are you doing? By the way, this is my name. I'm from this. You know, make friends and be like, do you mind if I train with you? You know, do you mind showing me that? I wouldn't recommend going up to everyone, be like, teach me that, you know, because that could get annoying sometimes. And sometimes people just go there to just train themselves and they don't have time to teach other people. But, you know, you will come across some nice performers that be like, yeah, I'll show you that. Like, I mean, I'm one of them. My husband is too. But you will have some people that would be like, I don't know, I did this like this. I don't know my body. I was just born into this world like this. I don't know how to help you. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have some people like that. But, you know, be curious. Go into a stunt gym and become friends. Network. It's very important to network with everyone, whether you're a stunt performer or not. Everyone. Producer, cleaning lady, whatever. Whatever you are, the more friends you have, the better you are. And one of the things that I do a lot is networking. I think that's what has helped me a lot.
With that, we're going to take another short break. So
stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We would like to take a moment to thank our partners who helped make this podcast possible. Cine Video Tech has been providing film equipment, training, and services to the film industry both inside and outside the U.S. since 1968. ComTV offers consulting and production services for a wide range of entertainment, marketing, advertising, and commercial projects.
Welcome back, film family, to the Cinema Pathway Podcast. I'm Dana Della Cam, your host, here with actor and stuntwoman Yesenia Cosio. So, Yesenia, before we stop for the break, we started talking about, you know, how long does it take to get started in the stunt world to be considered a professional?
When you first get started, I mean, it's not easy for any athlete or performer. Always tell people that just go and take like a stunt class or something like that. Not to say, hey, I'm a stunt man or stunt woman now because you just went and took a class for a week, 2 weeks, a few months, even like a year or two, even maybe even three. You know, you could say I'm an aspiring stunt performer. And the reason why this is so sensitive is because what we do has everything to do with safety and our life. We're constantly risking our life. So imagine us working so hard at a craft to perfect it, to make sure that our safety levels are at its highest. And we work on so many different things, you know, like gymnastics, martial arts, wire work, high falls, water work. I mean, there's so much that goes into it that then you have certain people that just take a class and be like, I'm a stunt man, I'm a stunt woman. And not only is that disrespectful to those that have been in the industry for a while, but it's also very dangerous. Because if I am a stunt coordinator and I want to hire someone that calls himself a stuntman or stunt woman, right, I'm taking your word for it, and I bring you onto my set, and now you don't know what you're doing, now you're causing me not only to look bad, but now you could potentially hurt yourself, mm-hmm. and you're causing a safety issue. So lying about your status just because you want to look cool to the world or to your friends, like, oh, I did a stunt workshop and now I'm a stuntman, it's like very, very, you know, sensitive. And it's something that people have to be careful with. And a lot of people do that. I see that so often. And I'll be honest, it pisses me the hell off every time, because I didn't even start calling myself a stunt performer till like the fourth year because of my peers, out of respect and out of all that. You know, I don't care, like, well, my background was in parkour or martial arts or whatever it is. Like, you just don't do that. Because there's been people, legendary people in the business for more than 20 years, 40 years plus, that are in the industry. And these are stunt professionals. These are people that if you haven't been to a big high budget set and have experienced a big stunt where your life was in danger or you felt like you potentially almost died on a stunt, then you probably aren't a stunt performer. And I'm pretty sure that these people that call themselves stunt performers and they just started in the industry have not encountered something like that. And I'm not saying that you have to encounter seeing death in the eye. The higher you get in this world, the more trust coordinators have on you and the bigger the gags. The bigger the jobs you get and the more dangerous they become. So yes, the danger level goes up.
Just to circle back on that, being on a big budget film and, you know, like you were just saying, you had to learn 25 combinations in a day and pitch it and things of that nature. So how is it, you said it also has to do with the pitch, how you pitch, you know, your work to what you're doing. So now all of a sudden to pitch, how do you do that successfully?
So our pitch is called a pre-visual. Right, a pre-visualization of what the director has in mind. And these pre-visualizations are not only physical, they come with scripts. So we need to know, if I'm, for example, doubling, let's say Salma Hayek, and, you know, she has this whole script, but within her script, she has action. I can't just be like, okay, left punch, right punch, kick, ignore the dialogue, go into my next action. See, I can't do that. You know, I have to know the script, I need to know her dialogue, whether I'm like an A-lister actor while I'm doing it or not. I mean, it helps. It helps if you're a really good actor because it helps sell this concept to the director even better. But, you know, this is why they get top stunt performers, people that have been in the industry, people that have experience, not just with acting, but performing and knowledge of being on a big set. Because now you're prepared so that you know under pressure, if they give you a script and like, hey, I need you to memorize this. You could get that done efficiently and also be able to do the physical portion efficiently, because I've seen a lot of actors that I've been on set with that I've doubled and, you know, some that I've gotten to work with. And these people are people I grew up watching on TV. And as soon as you give them like an action scene, they start like, they'll start choking. You'll almost be like, wow, this used to be my idol, like this person. You know, like you know, you think less of them, but it's more like, okay, they haven't, you know, really been thrown into things like this. But it's very important to be prepared in every way. You know, like if you're a director, you know every department. You know lighting, you know camera, you know grip, you know everyone, because you need to be able to know these things. So my fight is against directors that don't give the time to invest in the stunt department, which is such a big department and such an important one. And if anything, it's going to make you a better director because you're going to understand that world better. And instead of having these separate worlds together, you could kind of just marry them, right? And make it into one storyline instead of, okay, so they fight here and now there's dialogue and there's fight here. And that you could see it on the big screen when you have that separation rather than when you marry those things together, you know, and make it just one story. And also pay attention to the details, because that's the other thing, is that a lot of them don't care about the details. They're like, yeah, you could throw a kick. That one's fine. Yeah, that works. It's like, no. Why would you throw a hook kick there? It wouldn't make sense. This is why it's important for them to have knowledge of that world. And this is why directors, the film Extraction and The Fall Guy, the most recent one that everyone loves, I have yet to meet someone that did not like that movie, were so successful, because those films were made by stunt coordinators that are now, you know, directors. They're second unit directors too, but now they're first unit directors. So when you have someone with that much knowledge about action and just story, you know, you get a beautiful film. So yeah, it's definitely very important, going back to what you said, to not call yourself a stunt performer if you haven't been in the industry long enough, out of respect.
You also produced your production. So how did you jump into that producing work?
It's called trying to obtain power. So as you go down this, right, and this is something that might help a lot of people that are listening, I learned something not very long ago, okay, and this is by doing research, listening in to how other actors have done it and action professionals. If you want to get the attention or for people to consider you, you need to create your own content. You can't just wait for someone to hire you, right? Because there's so many things that happen. Strike or, you know, well, I like the redhead better than the blonde or, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. You know, things that are not in your control. You need to create your own content and you need to be able to create it in a way where people are going to be like, wow, this is good stuff that I actually want to see, you know? I got into that world now while doing stunts because we are also filmmakers. We have to be able to create our own films because we create the pre-visual for the directors. So from obtaining that kind of experience, we're like, well, we need to create our own stuff now because if people could see that we could do it, then we get the opportunity. And we already have, you know, these big directors and producers that follow us, you know, or follow me or whatever. But once you start getting into that world, they kind of start following up on you. And now you start creating this content for yourself. And then they're like, okay, I could totally see her doing this. And I can't tell you how many times I know people that have landed a big film or whatever it is out of something that they just saw, something small that they made, maybe for themselves, with them friends or whatever, you know, something well made. And that they got an opportunity to audition and landed a big role because of it. So it's very important to just create your own content and produce your own stuff. And I'll give you a perfect example. I read up on Barbie and Margot Robbie. And originally, Margot Robbie wasn't supposed to be Barbie. They wanted to cast Anne Hathaway, but I'm not sure if it was with Sony Studios during that time. And then I think a different studio picked it up with Margot Robbie. Something happened along the way. But Anne Hathaway was not producing it. She was just casted as an actor and they liked her. But then once that dropped, it didn't go through. Another company got it. Person producing it was Margot Robbie. And she started writing it too. And then she said, well, I'm going to hire myself in the film because she's producing it. She's writing it. As a writer, you believe so much in the character that you're like, I am this character. So the only reason she had the ability to do that is because she's producing her own film. Mm-hmm. So, and this happens a lot too. It happened with The Rock and Black Adam. DC Comics wouldn't hire him to be a superhero because they didn't see him in that light, or maybe they wanted someone better. It happens even with the big stars. Mm-hmm. So he's like, all right, well, fuck them. I'll create my own shit.
Yeah.
And I'll be the producer of my own shit, right? Because he got the money to do it at a high budget level. Mm-hmm. And now he's Black Adam. So it's called power, right? So in the beginning, you obtain the skills and, you know, little by little, you get experience, you go on set, you let time do its thing, and then you start creating power. You start making investments in yourself or in companies or whatever to keep reproducing that money. And then you start investing in the things that you want to do because you're not always going to get the opportunity from the bigger people. It doesn't matter who you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. If The Rock didn't get it and Margot Robbie didn't get it and even J-Lo in her most recent film, she had to fund her own film for, I think, $27 million. I think it's called Marry Me or something like that. She was with Ben Affleck. Yeah, it was about Ben Affleck, I think. But she wanted to do a music video film. None of the networks wanted to pick it up because they just didn't believe in her vision. So she's like, well, fuck them. I'm going to invest $27 million out of my pocket. And she did her own film. So that's called power. So, you know, that's just the way it works. You start producing and then that's how you get what you want. You put yourself in that light.
J-Lo also for the Hustlers film, she took a cut on salary and took an executive director credit. And so she got paid on the back end, which was a lot smarter. Talk about boss.
Yeah, a lot of us don't even understand how to get to that point. But as you start to kind of get in that world, you start to understand, oh, so this is how it works, you know? Because you're like, how do these people get these big roles? You know, and then they don't. A lot of them don't. They have to create their own opportunities. So, yes.
At the highest levels.
At the highest level because they have money at this point, right? Yeah. But you could do that at a smaller level and still do it. And you're still living your dream. And at some point, it's going to get someone's attention. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you're going to eventually end up at a higher budget.
When you tag your worker, do you like tag like casting agents or studios or something? Like, how do you think
people find talent online?
I think through hashtags. Hashtags are very effective. I use them a lot. And with everything that I tag, even if it's a selfie, I put casting and producer. Because I've had a lot of producers find me and even talent agencies through Instagram. And it's hashtags work a lot. I'm not going to say that you're going to get a job right off of it because of it. But if you're consistent and you use certain tags like filmmaking or producer, casting, talent agent, stuff like that. There are a lot of producers actually live on social media trying to find talent. And they found me a lot of times through that.
Tell us about your films, The Betrayal and Hunted.
Those films were short films when I first started. Those were like great little starter films that I produced, and it was amazing to be part of it. Now, you know, that was like probably like 10 years ago or more. And that's kind of like a way that I got started into the world and understanding producing and filmmaking and also being an actor in it. And that was kind of like my little starter pack films that they're so important. And even till today, like I would not say no to an amazing short film that's well done. Like, if it's well done, I don't care who is funding it. You know what I mean? I'm in it. I want to be in it. A well-written story. And, you know, you see it even with, like, A-listers that, you know, they'll work, you know, certain independent films and stuff like that because they believe in the story and because it's well-made. So I believe in definitely doing that.
What's the difference between being an actor and a stunt actor or an action?
Yeah, an action
actor. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you were right in both. An actor has absolutely do nothing with when it comes to, you know, action scenes and stuff like that. They just focus on dialogue and that's basically about it. An action actor does both. Perfect example of it is Jackie Chan, right? And Keanu Reeves, Bruce Willis, you know, all these actors that these are action actors. These are not actors. These people are daredevils as much as they are actors. So that's basically the difference between the two. And I feel that every actor should definitely take up some action experience or, you know, fight choreography or stage combat. It's very important. Even if you don't want to like do it, it gives you so much more knowledge as an actor, period.
I think it was Stella Adler that was some, I was just watching like something on Instagram and it was like, do an action before you start a scene because that will just give like momentum to the scene and it'll just give like purpose and reason to where you're starting instead. You know, create an energy to start from, a starting point, which I just love that so much. So how do you prepare for these roles, for acting roles? Is it different? Because I essentially, like you said, even when you're doing stunt acting, you're still expected to act at the same time, right? Because you can't do action, definitely. Words, you know, action, you know. So how do you prepare for the roles on like both sides?
And a lot of the roles that have been given to me and a lot of the scripts have been under a lot of pressure, which is like write maybe like a few days or a week before, maybe on the day. Or on the day we just change it 15 minutes ago, adapt. And this happens even on really big sets. Honestly, the biggest thing that I focus on at that moment is being present and focusing and not worrying about messing up. Because a lot of us, you know, and it happened to me on a TV show called Echo Marvel. Mm-hmm. It was the lead, she does sign language. She does not speak. My actress, I was doubling on that one. My actress got COVID and they were like, hey, so we're gonna do a face swap. So here's a script. They're like, do you know how to do sign language? And I'm like, no. And they're like, do you understand it? I'm like, no. This was such a challenge because the actress was, I didn't know when she would stop talking because she was doing all these things. And I'm just like, what? I'm like, so I didn't know what my next line was. And that was so, the difficulty level of that was, and it was like a scene of four people. So it was like me, the actress, and two other superheroes or something. I don't know. And then, they had to do the face swap with me. So I had to act the scene and it was the most, my heart wanted to pop out of my chest. And I'm like, just saying what happened to focus and be present and in the moment. It was like some other level kind of acting. And I was like, okay, this is definitely something that I need to prepare for. And a lot of people don't think about that, but now it's becoming a very common thing where there's a lot more sign language and stuff like that. And I'm like, how do you act with someone that does sign language? Like, is there acting the same? Like, is there a difference? And at the moment, all I could think about was take a deep breath and relax and be okay with messing up. Be okay with it. And I think what we freak out about is don't mess up. Don't mess up. Say this word and then try to act it out at the same time as you're trying to remember it. And you know, and it's just be okay with messing up and improvisation, even in a high budget film. Because sometimes I've had to, you know, like improvise certain things and the director actually ends up liking it. You know, sometimes you'll have some people that are really strict on their script. But sometimes they're just like, okay, I don't care if you switch up the words and stuff like that. But I definitely try to stay as prepared as possible. And I think doing a lot of auditions keeps my feet wet. So whenever I'm put in the position, like that, I'm kind of like, I feel refreshed. I don't feel like I just jumped into something because I don't take acting workshops anymore, but I do a lot of auditions, for films and stuff like that. And I think just kind of staying in that world and doing that a lot is kind of what I use as a refresher to kind of help me and keep my focus, because that's the first thing as actors we lose is our focus, where now we're like, oh, there's a camera looking at me. Okay. you know, we get that blanked out and it happens, but yeah, that's basically what I do.
Awesome. Okay, great. Well, we are going to take a short break, so stay tuned. You do not want to miss it.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, and we hope you do, support us by subscribing to your favorite podcast platform and giving us a rating. Then, head to our online store at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop, where you can purchase Cinema Pathway gear, including t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Be sure to also follow us on Instagram at Cinema Pathway Podcast for all the behind-the-scenes photos and more.
Welcome back, film family. You are listening to the Cinema Pathway Podcast. I'm Dina Della Camera. And we are here with actor, stunt woman, producer, and now entrepreneur. So we're going to add another title there, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. Yesenia Cosio. So before we dive into your new venture, tell us, have you ever had to use all of your stunt and martial arts background in your daily life?
You know, when you get into this world, you're like, man, I wish he would. I know, just try. I bet you won't try. Got a moment definitely where I'm just like, man, back in the day when I didn't know anything, I thought I was a hard ass. Now I'm like, I will walk away, but if you touch me. No. So yeah, I did have an encounter one time. I was getting out of set really late. I parked the car, go inside the gas station, and it's a very bad neighborhood. I remember walking in to just grab a drink, and I go in the fridge, and then I noticed this guy, you know, standing next to me, just grabbing a drink too. You're like, you know, it's just like everyone else. You don't think anything of it. He's in the other fridge grabbing a drink. But I get a weird vibe from him. He kind of stays looking at me from the corner of his eye, and then he grabs his drink, but it's so weird. And, you know, when you get into martial arts, you start to learn how to feel energies. And also, even in the stunt world, you start to learn how to feel energies and be more alert. Because actually a lot of our choreography has a lot to do with it, where sometimes you'll be standing in front and the whole fight choreography is right in back of you, and you're going to start with fighting everyone with not even looking at them, and you just got to feel their body. So we are very alert individuals, and when I was there taking my drink, I was like, I got weird vibes, but I didn't try to identify it, or I was too tired at that time, and I'm like, I'm just, you know, tired. So I walk up to the register to pay for my drink, and then I notice this guy's right in back of me with his drink. And again, I'm just noticing things. I'm not like, this is weird. I mean, he just has a drink in his hand. As I grab my drink and I walk out, I kind of start walking out the door a little slowly to see if he's going to pay for his drink. And he just puts his drink down and he tells him he doesn't want it. And he walks right in back of me. And I'm just like, okay, now this is weird. And he had kind of like a fishy vibe to him. So I start walking really fast to my car. And then as he's walking right in back of me, I go to my stunt bag and I grab a knife, because at that time I didn't have my gun with me. You know, I'm here thinking, okay, first of all, you know, stay calm is the first thing that comes to my mind. And we're used to being under pressure so much that I'm able to find that peace and calm really quick and think. Because the first thing we do is not think whenever we feel scared. So I'm like, okay, well, I have a lot of alternatives. I have a knife. I have the actual gas pump. Well, that'd be a nice one down his throat. I'm here, like, thinking of all these different things in my head. And the first thing I grab is just my knife. And I'm like, the first thing that we're taught is to just let the person know that we know what you're probably attempting, or that we know that there's a weird energy, just to see if they just kind of fuck off, right? And then if that doesn't work, because sometimes it doesn't even get to that point, then that's when you kind of let them know, well, I have a weapon. If you want to proceed, we could kind of go from here. Or, you know, you take plan C, which is usually not the best one. So I grab my knife and I put it, you know, close to my body, just so he doesn't see it yet. And as he's like walking down, I just open it up in front of him because I see his friend coming from the left too. And these people are just kind of merging straight into each other. And they're looking straight at me. Like, you know, it's pretty obvious. And I'm alone. I'm a woman. You know, I look dainty. So I love that part. So I grab my knife, I take it out, and I look straight at him. And he immediately just stops. Like, out of nowhere, he just stops walking. And that's when immediately I knew he was up to something. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bag flowing on the ground. And he reaches for it, like, just like a regular grocery store bag. And he grabs it. And he's like, oh, I was just going to put this in the garbage. What need do you have to tell me that? Obviously, he was up to something. And then he looks at his friend and he nods his head and he starts walking the other way. And I just stay looking at him, right? You know, that's what they say even to do with animals. You know, like, you don't give them your back. Mm, you stay looking straight at them. Because immediately, as soon as you give your back, they're going to attack you. Mm-hmm. And I just stay looking straight at him, like letting him know, if you want to do this, we're going to do it. And yeah, I don't know if he had a weapon, which was scary. I was scared, obviously. Anybody that wouldn't be in that situation, I mean, you're not human. But I couldn't show him that, and I was ready to show him that, all right, if you want a bait, it's not going to be an easy one, you know. But thankfully, he didn't have a weapon, at least, that I saw. And I took out my knife, and thankfully, it stopped at that, so I didn't have to use my stunt skills. Damn it! So frustrated. I'm like, I could have totally put him into a chokehold and just, ugh. But no. He just walked away. But I think the previous training that I have had and everything that I've done helped me to stay calm and be very aware of my surroundings and what's going on, because we tend to immediately go into panic mode, and then that's when they start running after you or start immediately doing something.
It escalates.
Yeah. And I was here thinking, like, well, even if he grabs me through the neck or anything like that, I'm not going to be, like, wrestling him off. I'm going to let him do what he wants to do and be like, all right, you good? Is that a good placement for you? Great. And just fucking throw him over something. You know what I mean? And then that's where we've trained a lot of jiu-jitsu and, you know, TKD. So many different things that we have to train for film. And we can't train it just for film. We got to train it for us, too, because you can't kind of learn to do something for acting, you know, especially martial arts. You got to really train it. They wanted to do it. It probably wasn't going to be a good day for them. But, you know, that definitely helped me. Having that kind of training just helped me stay calm and stuff like that. I haven't gotten to throw someone yet. I'm anxious to do that at some point. But hopefully I don't have to get to that point ever.
You will get to throw as many people as you want with your new gym that you are opening up. So let's dive into that. Tell us about this new business venture you have.
All right. That was a smooth transition,
though. Thank you.
I got to give it to you. Yeah. So with this new gym, this actually has been a dream of ours, me and my husband, to open up this stunt gym. And when I first started here in Miami, there is no place to train stunts or, you know, film.
So it's Miami Action Design?
Miami Action Design. There really isn't a place to go train. You know, like, you have some acting workshops here and there or whatever. But, you know, after being trained in LA and, you know, in Georgia and by all these top, you know, coordinators and directors and seeing the way things really are done, I'm like, man, like, I want to go back to my city and show people what I've learned and actually, you know, like, help raise my city and the filmmaking world down here. And I feel like this is a great opportunity for so many people to learn the way it's done, you know, in Hollywood. Yeah. Because a lot of us kind of have an idea and we work some independent films, maybe we've been on some shows, but, like, it's so different when you actually work with the people that are creating these big high budget films and when you actually get to work crew with them and, you know, be the filmmakers along with them and see the way that it's done.
You level up.
Yeah. Our intention was to level up, to try to bring that health to our city, you know, where we could teach and help raise this industry. And yeah, we're going to be doing definitely a lot of workshops. We're going to be renting it out to productions, which actually we kind of already have a little bit. But we're officially going to be open later next month. I'm going to have like a concrete date soon. And we're so excited because we have a lot of celebrities and news reporters and stuff like that that are really interested in checking out the gym. And a lot of the films that come down here, just like Bad Boys and stuff like that, you know, we're excited to have them do their pre-visuals at our gym, and people that just want to do wire work and go flying and have that experience that they don't have to take a flight to LA or Georgia to do, and they could just do it right there in their hometown. Mm-hmm. It's that opportunity that I didn't have, and I feel like it's kind of my way of giving back.
That is so beautiful, and I'm so glad you're choosing to do it here in South Florida, because, you know, it breaks my heart that so much goes to Georgia, which it's close, so I know so many people that are constantly, everybody's going back and forth, and it's nice to invest in the local community, so yeah. Thank you for doing that. So tell us more about, like, what kind of classes are going to be offered. Is it also, like, for kids as well? Do you have any, you know, is it adults only? Is it a membership? Like, tell us a little bit about that.
It's going to be all the above. We're going to teach workshops. The workshops are going to be taught, which actually we've already been offered by coordinators and directors from, you know, like the movie The Mother. Mm-hmm. With J-Lo, and we have also well-known coordinators from other films that I can't mention now, but there's a lot of people that have already been like, oh my God, I love Miami, any excuse to go down there. They're willing to, you know, give a workshop maybe a week or two and kind of teach people. And we're going to have open gym, which open gym will probably be like 3 to 4 hours for people to come and just the things that they have learned, just keep practicing it. And also there's a big tricking community in Miami. I'm not sure if you're familiar with tricking. Tricking is a form of highly creative martial art, if I could best explain it. So it's martial art, but in a very creative style where it's not so much about impact or how hard you hit, but how pretty you can make your kicks look and stuff like that. And they use that a lot for film. Mm-hmm. And there's a big community of that here. There's a big b-boy community down here too. There's a lot of talented people that have come out of here that when I go to other states, I'm like, you're from Miami? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, why'd you ever say anything? And they're like, eh. I'm like, well, that's boring. And I'm like, well, you know, I definitely, there's a lot of athletes out here that I want to help, or just people that just want to get into acting or just understand the world. Or maybe they just want to go for, you know, like a ride on one of our wires and understand what that's like. As I'm learning more about the necessities of the city, I'm starting to see that actually this is something that the city needs. Because yesterday I was just meeting with a graffiti artist. Mm-hmm. And he's like, wait, there's a big rappelling world now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the graffiti world that we want to learn how to, you know, rappel properly. And Chris, you know, my husband, he is, he's a rigger. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he does a lot of rigging and he knows how to fly people and stuff like that. And we also have a lot of people that want to come down here with a lot of credentials that want to teach that too and help out. So we've had a lot of support, thankfully, for this, because it's the first stunt gym in South Florida.
I'm excited. And, I mean, yeah. I want to go. I'm like, I want to start kicking.
Yeah. I mean, and it's such a great way to get in shape.
Yeah.
You know?
Hell yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You don't have to think. Like, yesterday I just had 2 donuts and I'm like, I'll burn it later. Like, you know, and it's not a boring workout. Like, you go to LA Fitness or whatever and have to be stuck on a treadmill. Like, this, you're going to, like, sweat, like, 10 pounds on the day.
Oh, hell yeah, because I used to do a capoeira.
Okay, there you go.
It's the best freaking workout on the planet. So you work every single millimeter of your body at once. But exactly. So as you were talking, the tricking kind of, I was like, oh, it sounds a little bit like maybe capoeira.
Yeah.
Kind of dance.
It's like a creative martial art. Yeah. And yes, kids are definitely going to be welcome too, but they're just going to be on a different schedule just because of safety issues and stuff like that. And, you know, how that could be with parents, but definitely, you know, we're going to have some classes for kids that, you know, want to just learn, you know, maybe they're actors and they just want to have some kind of stage combat background, or maybe up and coming stunt performers, you know.
And I think also for, like, little girls or young women, you know, growing up to have access to this type of thing is going to be really, really cool. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see.
Definitely.
Because, you know, like, you didn't even think about it as an option until you had that kind of epiphany, aha moment, you know,
right,
that you were like, oh, I want to do that, you know. So maybe if it's more accessible,
maybe more people will want to do it.
Exactly.
But with that, what do you think is the impact of AI on stunts, on the stunt industry, film industry in general? What do you think?
We're pretty much done. If I could put it in best term, right, for the stunt industry. I think as it continues to evolve, I don't feel like there's going to be much of a stunt department. And it's kind of sad, you know, to just see the way that it's evolving and just taking over so many things. And I mean, recently I was on a job. Are you guys are familiar with motion capture?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. Normally with motion capture, we wear this whole one full bodysuit, you know, with the little dots everywhere and stuff like that. And they need to calibrate you and all that. So I recently worked on a job where they didn't have to do any of that. And they were just like, we just need you to get, it was a living room, and just do the fight scene. And we're going to put a bunch of GoPros in every corner and they're going to record your motions. And then on the computer, we're going to kind of like control the way we want you to look. And I'm like, hey. And then they're like, yeah, so you don't even need to dress up or anything. Like, we're just going to be doing it just as you go. And basically they're like robbing our motions to manipulate them to do different things. And we had to do the same calibration process, but without really being calibrated, just for them to see our movements. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of creepy and sad, because if that type of artificial intelligence did not exist, I would have been working on that job several more days because they had to capture more of my movements. But now they're just manipulating it through a computer, so they just needed me for one day. So now it just takes us out of the picture, where now they're giving us less days of work, and eventually it's gonna just take us all out or just give us less work. And it's sad, but you know what? The way that I see things is we just have to take the world as it is and as it's coming at us and just try to adjust as we go, because there's some things beyond our control that we could only do so much to kind of help the situation, but we can't become overly frustrated by, that's it, I don't have a job, I hate this, I hate the world, I hate that. It's like, you know, just let the world be and let things, you know, give your input and trying to add some kind of positive impact back, but do remember that we can't control everything. I'm just taking it as we go. And either way, I'm transitioning into acting more now, so, which is still affects actors as well. I'm just now focusing a little bit more in the acting world. So that's my next goal as well.
So we're just going to ask you a couple questions.
Okay, I like this.
All right, so would you rather do an action movie with Jackie Chan or Chuck Norris?
Jackie Chan.
Would you rather be Carrie in The Matrix or like Gal Gadot in, or, you know, Wonder Woman?
I love Wonder Woman. Gal Gadot. I just love Gal.
If you won $1 billion in the lottery today, what would you do with it?
I would invest it.
$1 billion?
$1 billion? Yeah, because then I'm going to have $50 billion.
What do you think your superpower is?
I'm very caring.
How do you wish to be remembered?
As someone who helps change someone's life.
If you had to sum up all your work thus far in one word, what would it be?
Badass bitch.
Yeah. Where can we find you? Miami Action Design. And then how can people find you online?
Actually, you'll probably find me at the nearest bakery having a pastelito. You could check out Yesenia Cosillo Official. That's my Instagram. Or just Yesenia Cosillo. Anywhere you put it, it's going to pop up on Facebook, Twitter, and all that. But I usually stay on Instagram and Facebook. Yeah. Or I have a website too, yeseniacosillo.com.
Okay, and then Miami Action Design?
Yeah, Miami Action Design. We don't have our website up yet. But definitely, that's going to be up and coming. And you guys could definitely go there, I would say, in like 3 weeks from now and check it out. And I will be there too. So I'll be there welcoming everyone with open arms. So.
Yes. And that is in Kendall.
In Kendall area.
Okay. Yes. Kendall area. So definitely keep an eye. Please follow Yesenia Cosillo on all platforms and support her awesome work. And, you know, go by and check out Miami Action Design when it opens, because it just sounds like it's going to be a really neat space. And I can't wait to go myself and check it out. Yesenia, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It was so much fun talking to you.
I know.
Period.
Period. Queens supporting queens.
Yes,
period. Queen. I'm so excited. It's always good to. It's just great to uplift and empower the community. So thank you for doing that. And, you know, thank you for sharing your journey and, you know, just kind of circle all around. It's taking action and believing in yourself, being a yes and being open to the the opportunity and the journey. Don't be so consumed with the destination.
Exactly.
You know, follow. You heard that voice in your head to go intuition, in this direction. Yeah. And there was like no agreement. It wasn't like you had a path. It wasn't like you knew where it was going to take you. And you trusted yourself and you trusted the path. And you allowed it, you know, you just kept training and kept investing in yourself and getting better and being a yes and going after things and having that faith that, you know, you're just going to keep, you know, walking in to the next door that gets open to you. And it's really given you this rich, diverse career that now you get to really contribute and be a contribution to the whole community and share your knowledge and the next generation, because you're going to have kids there too,
yeah, exactly.
Right? So super, super exciting. So
the best thing I could say is do the world a favor and be yourself and be your best self, because we all need you, right? We all need that. Because if you become your best self, then you can create opportunities for others, and you can help others. And if you're not your best self, then you're just hindering the world.
And with that, until the next time, film family, that's a wrap.
Yay!
Lights out!